All right. Can someone indicate whether or not I'm not following whether we're streaming on? We are. Very well. Well, then the chair calls to order the Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform. And to the public and anyone else who may be watching or want to watch this, this committee is being held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which you can view on the Minnesota House webpage. It's temporary rules or rules that allow us rather to conduct official hearings and floor actions via remote convening, which then also allows for voting debate in a remote video telephone access manner. Anyone who's wishing to offer testimony relative to our hearings can contact our committee administrator at Jamael, J-A-M-A-E-L, dot Lundy, L-U-N-D-Y, at house.mn. Jamael dot Lundy at house.mn. For further information about this hearing, and the rules and the procedures, you can visit the Minnesota House website at www.house.ledge.state.mn. You can also follow us, and there's streaming video there. You can also follow us at Facebook Live and on YouTube. And those links are all on our House webpage. For this committee on the House webpage itself. So members, today's hearing involves several bills, including bills that we had prior hoped to have heard. And of course, we're way late a bit, right, as a result of the pandemic. As well as hearing bills, enacting on bills that we've heard in the past and that we may have laid over, and then a few bills from last year. If you all recall, we were efficiently, under bipartisan agreement, moving bills forward that had already been moved the year before with minimal debates since we already had those debates, you know, at that time. So with that, members, I think the first thing we need to do is take a roll call, so that we have on the record, who's in participation and that we can officially establish the quorum. So with that, I'm going to ask the chief clerk, yeah, right. I'm going to ask our clerk, committee clerk, to take the roll.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Mariani?
Present.
Edelson?
Present.
Johnson.
Present.
Christensen.
Present.
Considine.
Present.
Dean. Dean. Howard. Present. Okay, cool. Howard.
Present.
Lesh. Lesh. Long.
Present.
Lucero.
Present.
Miller. Miller. Moeller.
Present.
Nash. Nash. Novotny.
Present.
O'Neill.
Present.
Pinto.
Present.
Holston.
Present.
Lesh. Miller. Nash. Okay, cool. We have quorum.
What's our number?
14 present, 13 not here yet. No, sorry, 14 present, 3 not here yet.
Our committee group. Very well. And for those who are in the public, it's not unusual for members to come in after the roll. I know that Chair Lesh had just finished chairing a committee. So it could well be that we'll see our other three colleagues sometime soon. I'd ask the clerk to just monitor, you know, the screen to make sure they come in that we're acknowledging that and then marking them present. With that, members, we're going to start today's hearing with House File 4219, Representative Purcell. The chair will move House File 4219 be re-referred to the Judiciary Committee. And with that, I guess I'll turn to my staff to see whether we have Representative Purcell present. Okay, I've been informed he's having trouble logging on. It's one of the challenges that people in Greater Minnesota face from our still inadequate broadband access in our state, no doubt. But he'll keep working on that. In the meantime, why don't we take testimony from his testifiers? And let me just ask the testifiers if they're able to quickly describe the bill. If not, I can ask our House counsel to do that. Just trying to figure out how to do that efficiently. We do have DNR Colonel Rodman Smith and DPS, it says Colonel here, Matt Langer. So if staff can pull those up.
Mr. Chair.
Good morning, and you are, sir?
Colonel Rodman Smith with DNR. Would you like me to walk through the bill?
That would be terrific, Colonel Smith. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and this is my first Zoom testimony, so be patient with me. So House File 4219 is basically a DUI conformity bill. A couple years ago, Little Allen's Law was passed, which made the criminal portions of DUI between motorboats and wrecked vehicles align with traditional motor vehicles. Little Allen's Law was a huge step forward. There are some things that need to be cleaned up on the back end of this, of Little Allen's Law, for some conformity with traditional motor vehicles and for the ease of those people that are either been convicted or being charged with DUI, prosecutors, law enforcement, and everybody else. And so I'd like to thank the DWI Task Force for their work with this, the Department of Public Safety, State Patrol, BCA, Driver Vehicle Services, Office of Traffic Safety, and many others that walked through this language over the last year. I should also say the Revisor's Office, because there's a lot of change here. It looks like a lot of change, but it really isn't, because what they did is they repealed a couple of the old sections of statute and just replaced it with new because there were so many changes. And so I'll walk through the bill right now, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Terrific. Thank you, Colonel.
All right. So Section 1 of House File 4219 is the new, they repealed Chapter 8491, and so this is a new language. So Section 1 is the new language. It has definitions consistent with Chapter 169A for off-road recreational vehicles. Subdivision 2 of Section 1 and beyond are basically still the same acts that are prohibited. None of that has changed. That was stuff that was changed under Little Allen's Law. Line 2.3 and 2.6, those are some new things that are mostly be able to simplify that the Commissioner of Public Safety will be notifying people of things and not having the Commissioner of Public Safety and the DNR notifying people when they've been convicted of something. And so it's a simplifying, conforming piece with that. Lines 2.15 and 2.17, the penalties, that's old language. That's Little Allen's Law. That's the stuff that was changed a couple years ago. It's underlined here because, again, they took away the old, they repealed the old statute and they have the new one. Section 2, there's some cleanup and some conforming language. As you can see on 2.25, they're deleting some language that's just basically cleanup with this new law. Section 3, again, is some cleanup language since they did get rid of, but you can see 2.31, they got rid of, this repeals 8491, so they had to make that change. And then There was some on line 2.32, there was some language back in the day where we cross-referenced for some reason wrecked vehicles with game and fish law. We don't need to do that anymore. Chapter 97A is game and fish law. So that was removed. And then the rest of the language on 3.1 to 3.4 is some existing language. Section 4, section 1, and that was to do mostly with like wrecked vehicles such as ATVs and snowmobiles. Section 4, Chapter 86B is boating safety. And so again, they removed we are repealing 86B 331 and putting in a new statute 86B 33 because of the changes. And so again, I could walk through it, but basically Section 4 is a carbon copy of Section 1, except for it says motorboats instead of off-road vehicles. And so for the interest of time, I can skip down to some substantive changes that are a little more different. Subdivision 5 on page 4, again, it's some cleanup language under 86B for some conformity. We go to Section 6. This, is, again, is that cross-reference to game and fish. 97A is game and fish language, and so there's some cleanup language that we're moving there. If you see down on how much cleanup we're actually doing, line 4.18, there was language still in game and fish law that talked about the county and when the counties used to run courts. That has changed almost a decade ago. The state runs the courts now, and so there's a lot of language that had to do with county court. So that's being cleaned up in the county treasurer, and so all that is being cleaned up as well. Section 7 is actually changing the definition of peace officer when it comes to Chapter 169A. This is also Representative Christensen bill that you heard, Chair Mariani, House File 1149, which your committee heard and passed, I believe, to the floor. And so that's included in here as well. Section 8, again, line 5.15 is just cleaning up some language. That stricken language are now in the definitions under Section 1 and 4, so we can remove that language. It's redundant there. If we move to page 6. I believe it's Section 9. We're looking at amending Chapter 169A.52. That's test refusal, test failure. That's conforming language to make motorboats and everybody else be more like traditional motor vehicles. Section 10 is amending 169A.54, which is the conviction, adjudication, revocation. Again, more conforming language to traditional motor vehicles. Section 11, 171 are the DL statutes, and you can see most of this is also, again, conforming language. Line 6.24 talks about the commissioner notifying. That's the commissioner DPS. It's more conforming language so that people are notified by one agency and not two. Again, then Section 12 is, again, more conforming language when it comes to interlock. And then we have Section 13, reviser instructions, and then Section 14, which are the repealers.
Thank you, Colonel. Very thorough walkthrough. We do have the author with us now, so I'm going to call him up in a quick second. I think maybe just a very quick question I have for you, Colonel. Is there's nothing in this bill that's creating a new penalty. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, you are correct.
All right, very well. With that, I'm going to ask Representative Purcell, thank you for joining, being able to get connected, Representative. Good to have you here. We do have your bill before us. The chair has moved it. I believe my motion was to move it to judiciary. I'm being informed that the bill needs to go to Ways and Means. And so I'll be making that change in a second. But anyway, welcome to the committee and look forward to hearing your quick comments on why this bill is a good bill and why it's before us.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I had to get the right number here. And now I'm joining you and I heard last couple minutes and that Colonel Smith has walked through the bill I certainly look forward to this bill moving forward, and we want to get it to the floor, needless to say. And we do have Senate companion on this. This is I'm not going to repeat things that I know you've already heard, but this is following up on the Little Allen's law that was passed previously, and I think it's just the right thing to do, okay. Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I think
you're not going to be around tonight.
Okay, Representative Navandi, we need you to go on mute there for a sec. We do have we did hear from Colonel Smith.
Okay, well, I get your hamburgers done up.
Representative Navandi, you need to go on mute there. And we're going to hear from, I think, from Mr. Matt Langer. Colonel Langer, is he with us?
I'm here, Mr. Chair, as long as you can hear me. Thanks for having me.
I can hear you and see you. So
right.
Welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Wonderful, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I don't have any testimony that I need to regurgitate beyond what Colonel Smith provided. I'm mainly here for any questions that might come up about what this language might do or not do as it relates to impaired driving laws. So without delaying the committee's work, I'll just stand for any questions that might come up. But DPS is just fine with this bill as it's written.
Very well. Thank you. And thank you to DPS for working with our DNR folks and with the other eight bodies that were involved in this bill. So with that, I'm going to open this up for questions and or comments from committee members. And we have a question or comment from Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, Colonel Smith, and Representative Purcell, I want to thank you for finishing up this work on Allen's Law. I know Representative New worked very hard getting that through a couple of years ago. It's surprising what one little change can do to other areas of statute. And I want to commend you on the work you did to go through this and getting it cleaned up, some stuff that should have been done over a decade ago. So again, I want to thank you. This is looks to be a very good piece of legislation. Look forward to supporting it.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a simple question. What do the Chiefs and the Sheriff's Association, what do they have to say about the bill? Do they have any concerns, or are they supportive?
Representative Purcell, maybe we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have the answer to that question. Perhaps Colonel Smith does.
Colonel Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I have had extensive conversations with the Sheriff's Association. This will help quite a bit. They support it, obviously. The big piece with this conforming language will now, all motor vehicles, no matter what it is, law enforcement will be able to use e-charging when they process a DUI. And so this is going to make it much more streamlined, not just for the officer in the field, not just the prosecutors, but also those people that have been charged and their defense attorneys as well, to do this through recharging. And we won't have to get some type of supplemental budget to redo e-charging because of the differences in wrecked vehicles and motorboats versus traditional motor vehicles. And so law enforcement is very supportive of this.
Very well. Representative O'Neill?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Very well. Any other questions or comments? And I don't see anyone else in the waiting room that's waiting to testify on this. Any closing comments from you, Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members, and Representative Johnson, thanks for your support and saying that out loud. I just happy to get this bill to the finish line, and we'll have a good discussion on the House floor, and so appreciate support. Thank you.
Representative Purcell, I've been informed by staff that we need to send your bill to Ways and Means. And so I'm going to, as the maker of the motion, I'm going to amend my motion that House File 4219 be recommended or be passed to the Committee on Ways and Means. With that, then, that's the motion before. Clerk will then take the vote.
Yes, I'm just going to have time. Mariani?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Lesh?
Aye.
Long?
Aye.
Lucero?
Yes.
Miller? Moeller? Moeller?
Yes.
Nash? Novotny?
Yes.
O'Neill?
Yes.
Pinto?
Yes.
Tolston?
Yes.
Miller? Miller? Nash? Nash. Okay. 15 ayes, and then either two absent or excused.
Very well. House File 4219, then. The motion prevails, and House File 4219 is on its way to Ways and Means. I want to thank you, Representative Purcell, and Colonel Robin Smith, and Colonel Matt Langer for being with us here today and for working on this legislation. Members, I've been informed that I haven't asked to approve the minutes. And so I'm wondering if perhaps our vice chair, Representative Edelson, would move adoption. Let's make sure I have the right date. April 16th. Representative Edelson, would you be so kind as to move the minutes of April 16th? Or Representative Paulson could do it as well.
I'd be happy to move it. But I just got a message from Tim Miller, chair, that he's trying to get into the meeting and he's being kept out.
All right.
I don't know what that means or how you change that, but I just got a text message from him.
I actually had something like that happen to me on a House floor meeting a week or two ago, and I had to scramble around to finally get in. We'll see if staff can help him get connected.
Thank you.
Perhaps, Jason, you can do that. Meanwhile, we have been joined by Chair Lesh as well, so I just want to acknowledge that. Representative Poston moves adoption of the minutes of April 16th. Any discussion? No discussion, then the clerk will take the roll on the adoption of the April 16th minutes.
And Chair Mariani?
Representative Johnson?
I was just wondering, there wasn't, on the last bill we did, there was no roll call request, but we did a roll call. I'm just wondering, I think we're honest enough so we can do the ayes and nays without having to do a roll call unless one is requested.
Yeah, you know, when we first, Representative Jensen, you may be right about that. When we first did this work, you know, we were told that we needed to record everything by voice vote. I have participated in committees, now that you bring it up, where we've done just ayes and nays. And so let me ask staff to double check with that. I'm also going to check in really quickly here. If Chair Lesh, if you're still here, I think I've sat in committees with you that you chaired where we've done the ayes and nays. Do you have any insight on Representative Johnson's question?
Well, Ms. Chair, we can do that. You're right. When we first did our first committee, we could vote by roll call. But now it has changed where certain procedural motions, if the chair is comfortable with it, can do it by voice vote. But it really comes down to this is a much more difficult process. And if, in fact, you end up screwing up, it causes a lot more problem. But if it's pro forma and everyone's with it, we can do a voice vote as far as I'm concerned.
Why don't we do this, Representative Johnson, as we move forward through the hearing, I'll check in with you. And if you're amenable, we can do just voice votes. And if let's not say if you're not amenable, let's just say if you prefer, then through unanimous consent, then we'll do a a roll call.
That works for me.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. So with that, I guess right now I'm checking with you then, because we have the minutes before us. Would a simple INA be sufficient for the for our GOP caucus?
Or if you want to try it, for those who can, we can, for if they're in favor of it, just raise their hand, because we have that function.
I think we have to do the verbal.
Okay, that's fine. We can do the verbal.
Let's give that a try. So all in favor of adoption of the minutes of April 16th, and make sure you're unmuted here, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Boy, that's pretty good. The April 16th minutes are adopted. Okay. Let's see. All right, so now we're on to House File 717. The chair, this is my bill. The chair moves that House File 717 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. There is an author's amendment to House File 717. And so the chair moves that the A4 amendment, and let me just make sure this should be a delete all amendment. Oh, I have it in the wrong place. Yes, this is a delete all amendment. It's the, and I'm sorry, I misspoke. This would be the DE4 amendment. I have the wrong notes here. So the chair moves the DE4 amendment to House File 717. And members, what this does then is it lifts up the language of House File 998, which is Representative Eklund's amendment, which produces the Veterans Restorative Practices in Lieu of Incarceration legislation. This bill is before us primarily because, if successful, it would generate revenues through bed savings and FTEs accruable to the Committee on Correction, or rather the Department of Corrections. I don't know if we have Representative Eklund with us here. I'm just checking with staff very quickly to speak to this bill. So let's give a second here for me to confirm that.
He should be here.
He's here in the waiting room, Jason, is that what I heard?
He's actually in the, I think he, it's, his name is on the screen, so he should be inside already.
Oh, terrific. Representative Eklund.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariani.
Good afternoon, Chair Eklund. Good to have you here today. We haven't voted yet on the amendment, but I thought it'd be...
Chair Mariani?
Representative Johnson.
Representative Nash is also in the waiting room waiting to get in.
Very well.
I'm here. I'm here now.
Okay. Welcome, Representative Nash. So we're still waiting for Representative Miller. It's good to have you with us, sir. So with that, Representative Eklund, if you can describe House File 998, which for our purposes today is the DE4 amendment to House File, the lead off. Amendment DE4 to House File 717.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm excited to be working with the Veterans Defense Project on this important piece of legislation. This will be the first of its kind in the country, and I'm incredibly proud to be carrying it. Sorry about stumbling over my tongue. The bill before you, the Veterans Restorative of Justice Act, provides the framework for Minnesota courts on sentencing a justice-involved veteran, which will ensure treatment for service-related disorders that lead to a criminal offense, while allowing the veteran the opportunity to fully reintegrate with the community without a record of conviction. It is not a free ride, as the veteran defendant will be required to submit to whatever rehabilitative efforts the court deems necessary to protect public safety. The language is developed through an 18-month collaboration of key Minnesota veterans criminal justice stakeholders. It adapts and improves on the best practices from Minnesota's and other states' veterans courts' veterans sentencing statutes, including California Appeal Code 1170.9, Texas Government Code Chapter 124, and the existing drug sentencing options of Minnesota Statute 152.18. I also have, I believe, John Kingery here to explain the more intricate details of the bill. He is the board chair of the Veterans Defense Project, if there are any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Very well. Chair Eklund, did you want Mr. Kingery to simply answer questions or to offer some testimony or both?
Mr. Chair, I think he's here just to answer questions. We've fully vetted this bill through especially the Judiciary Committee prior to this. So I think they were getting sick of seeing me, actually. So I think Mr. Kingery is just here for answering questions if members have any.
Okay, very well. Are there any questions for Chair Eklund and or Mr. Kingery? We do have a question from Representative Otney. Representative Otney.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Eklund, will domestic abuse cases be subject to this?
Chair Eklund.
Chair Mariani, I think I better defer to the higher knowledge on this. So if Mr. Kingery could answer that question, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. And I apologize if I get your name wrong. I'm going to ask you to spell your name once I call on you. Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if you might be in.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Kingery, K-I-N-G-R-E-Y. The provisions within this bill would apply to offenses on a level 7 or below criminal offenses through the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. House research may be able to give you some better examples, but I believe in my experience in Veterans Court, and I'm a mentor in the Ramsey County Veterans Treatment Court, I am now on my second veteran, and he would have graduated last month had it not been for the virus and so forth. And my recollection from my experience in Veterans Court is there are some individuals in there that have been charged with instances of domestic violence, I believe, and maybe Jeff Diebel could answer that in more detail.
Very well. I'm going to ask Mr. Diebel to offer some any insight he might have on, particularly on Representative Otney's question.
Mr. Chair and members, I apologize. I don't have the sentencing guidelines grid at my fingertips here. I may defer to Ben Johnson on this. He's a little more, he's more of an expert on the sentencing guidelines. So let me see if he's available here. I know he's on the call here.
Terrific. And Mr. Diva, I just can't imagine why at home you would not have the full access to everything that we use.
Well, I do, not necessarily in a timely manner. And I think we're running an unlicensed school here.
Yeah, you and the rest of Minnesota for sure. Mr. Johnson, are you with us?
Mr. Chair, this is Ben Johnson, and I can provide some information. The bill would apply to all misdemeanors and all gross misdemeanors, and then any felony that's a level 7 or below. Level 7s or below, the sentencing guidelines grid goes from 1 to 11. 11 is the highest level offense. 1 is the lowest level offense. There are several offenses that are level 7. It would include things like felony DWI, financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult. Level 6 offenses would include some assault offenses, second-degree burglary, non-residential burglary, for example, would be a level 4. Most theft crimes would be level 3 that are felony level. So all of those types of offenses would be eligible under this bill. If the committee needs a larger list of level 7 offenses, I can pull that up in just a second as well.
All right, let me circle back to Representative Otte. Representative Otte, to see whether any of that has been helpful to your question.
Yes, it does, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, very well. Thank you. We have Representative Polston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, Chair Eklund, excuse me. Out in our neck of the woods in greater Minnesota, northern Minnesota, who is going to provide the programming to veterans if they enter into this diversion program? How is that going to be done?
Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and Representative Polston. So we've seen some veterans courts have been where counties have banded together to offer the service similar to what they do for their drug and alcohol courts. And so that is what we envision with this going on for especially our more rural Minnesota counties. So I could see, for instance, where I live, I could see potentially Coochin County and Lake of the Woods County combining for a veterans court.
I'm wondering if Mr. Kingery, if you have any thoughts on this as well.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, I do. Thank you very much. Last fall, they stood up a veterans court in southeast Minnesota. And just going on memory, I believe that applies to about 8 counties. And they sort of split southeast Minnesota into 2 segments, one on the western side and one on the eastern side. And I know also, several years ago, there were a number of counties in western Minnesota that banded together to form a veterans court, where once a month they would pull everybody together at one location and go through the proceedings with regard to veterans court. So there is flexibility, especially in the rural areas where you don't have the numbers where each county would have to have a court.
Very well. Representative Polston.
Okay, thank you. One other question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Chair Eklund, once the person successfully completes the conditions of probation in the diversion program, what happens to their record?
Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and Representative Polster. And again, not being an attorney, I'm just a retired papermaker. I'd have to ask Mr. Kingery. I'd have to ask Mr. Kingery to talk about that.
Okay.
Very well. You might be our first retired paper maker on at least this committee. Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm a retired attorney, but I can certainly answer that question. The records they will become non-public records. They will be retained by the courts and the BCA. So if there are future offenses, they would be able to access those records and they could be under consideration if the future offense, if there is one, could be enhanced.
Very well. Representative Polston.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After that exchange, I have a whole long series of questions and tremendous concerns. I'm really confused. We already have veterans courts, and I read through the language, and this is not a veterans court. We keep referencing veterans courts. So this is not one of the specialty courts that we already have established. This is something different. What it does, I'm not quite sure, because we already have veterans courts, and they're doing pretty well. They're starting to expand, and some are even becoming hybrid courts, which are some drug court combined with some other things. And I've spent quite a bit of time pushing, especially courts throughout the state. I was a legislature that the legislator that expanded specialty courts across the entire state and allowed that to happen, and they really have flourished. But this is not that. This is not Veterans Court. This is different. I'm concerned because in your opening statement, you said this is the first in the country, and then you turned around and said that it's following the best practices of other states. But if it's the first in the country, I'm not quite sure what other states are following if we're the first. So that's confusing. Also, I would like to know, since this is clearly not Veterans Court, how has the Judicial Council, my question is, how has the Judicial Council been involved in crafting this bill? You did mention that it was a large group of stakeholders specifically in criminal justice, but I didn't hear any other stakeholders, which one of the most important ones would be the Judicial Council. So I would like to know, first of all, who are the stakeholders that crafted this, and was the Judicial Council involved in crafting it, specifically the Judicial Council, not a judge?
All right, so several questions there, Chair Eklund and Mr. Kingery. One, I think, has to do with a distinguishing question relative to Veterans Court and to this restorative justice sentencing framework. And then the other has to do with the group of stakeholders involved in shaping this. So, Chair Eklund, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Mariani and Representative O'Neill. So last, after our couple of rounds through the Judiciary Committee last year, we realized this bill wasn't ready, so we went back to work on it with some of the groups that had questions. And one of the folks we met with was the Chief Justice. Mr. Kingery and I met with her. We tried to get her blessing on it, and Mr. Kingery can fill in more on the details of it, but she, as far as I could tell when I left the meeting, that she remained neutral on it. And then, unfortunately, my main file on House File 998 is in my office, so I don't have the list of groups that were stakeholders that were involved in this, but I think Mr. Kingery could probably recall a lot of those on his own. So I'll turn that over to him, if that's all right, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill.
Very well. Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, part of this process with the working group started before I joined. And I know initially there were some individual judges that were involved. But in addition, I know there were two or three county attorney offices involved, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the public defense, different veterans organizations. And with regard to the Judicial Council, when we met with the Chief Justice last fall, they had not taken a position on it yet. Separate from that, we did, several of us, Representative Eklund was not at the meeting, met with the state court administrator on February 10th. And at that time, the Judicial Council had not taken a position on the bill.
Very well. And Mr. Kingery, to this question of distinguishing this, approach, which I understand as a restorative justice sentence framework from the existing Veterans Court, what can you share with the committee?
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, what this bill seeks to do is to provide some uniformity in the way veterans treatment courts are administered. We're estimating that currently only about 26 of the 87 Minnesota counties have a veterans treatment court. So this is certainly an attempt to provide some equity to veterans that are caught up in the criminal justice system statewide. Right now, there's obviously a number around the metro area. I mentioned Southeast Minnesota, but this would seek to provide some uniformity statewide on veterans treatment courts.
That's helpful. Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's really problematic. So if you're trying to standardize a treatment court system, and you don't have the blessing of the judicial council, then this is very problematic. I don't know that this is needed. I don't think that this is helpful. The other thing that was just pointed out by Representative Poston, which he didn't circle back to explain this very specifically, but if a woman has experienced domestic violence and her abuser goes through this system and finishes the program, then that is expunged essentially or hidden from the public. So the next victim that he might have could not do a check of his criminal history because it won't be there. So having this be a 7 or below, that's way too high. A 7 basically means first, second, third degree murder, 7 or up, higher. First degree, second degree, assault, first degree, aggravated robbery, first degree, burglary. But domestic violence, including domestic violence, assault by strangulation, if they finish this program, is now not on the public record, and that will absolutely endanger victims. There are so many reasons why I oppose this bill, so many. I don't think that the Veterans Court needs best practices. I think they've got it figured out. I don't think this is the way to do it. We don't have the blessing of the judicial council. We have a conversation that's happened, but that's a far cry from them saying, yes, this is absolutely what we should do. We want to have these best practices. And I'm saying that from someone who actually moved legislation forward for the past 5 or 6 years with treatment courts. There are ways to do things and there are ways not to do things. And I just think this is not the way to do it. And I would oppose this bill. I don't think that this is the answer. I have one last final question, and you had mentioned the Veterans Defense Project, which had sought additional funding, and because they had gotten $400,000, I think, and they're asking for $800,000, and they were not able to substantiate their expenditures and how they actually got more veterans into Veterans Court, and so they did not get the appropriation. And what are they involved in now in this new endeavor? So if this was to move forward, what activities would the Veterans Defense Project be doing if this passes? What are they now going to be doing that they weren't doing before if we pass this?
And I'm sorry, Representative Neal, that's a question to Chair Eklund.
Either he or John Kingery, who serves as the executive director of the Veterans Defense Project. At least he was the last time I talked to him.
Very well. Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Neill, members of the committee, I was never the executive director. I've been on the board of the Veterans Defense Project. I was chair through December. I still continue to serve on the board. The board simply is there is no paid staff on the board. There haven't been paid staff since last mid-August. And we are made up of a number of key stakeholders, I'll use that term, that advocate for the expansion of veterans courts. And that's why they're very supportive of this particular proposal. Let me just circle back very quickly to the Judicial Council. Far be it from me to speak for the Judicial Council or any judge, but it is not uncommon for the Judicial Council not to take positions on legislation. That is not uncommon at all. But again, I don't want to speak for them.
Mr. Kingery, it's I think I've run into that uncommonness before. I think there is a real hesitancy or tendency on the part of our judicial branch to, not have a big presence in the legislative process. Very well. Let's see. We have Representative Mueller and then Representative Johnson. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And something that Mr. Kingery just said about the Judicial Council, I'm new to all this, but that's my understanding, too, that it's really not uncommon for them to not take a position. I was in judiciary when this bill was heard a couple of times. I actually think it passed unanimously out of the Judiciary Committee back in February. And I don't recall any opposition from the County Attorneys Association or from any victims' rights groups like Violence Free Minnesota. Mr. Kingery, would you please verify whether either of those groups oppose this bill?
Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mueller, members of the committee, I am not aware of any opposition from those groups that you mentioned. I know the Minnesota County Attorneys Association has taken a position in favor of the bill. One thing I'd like to add with regard to domestic violence, both when the Hennepin County Veterans Court was stood up as well as the Ramsey County Veterans Court was stood up, they worked with all, again, I'm going to use this word, key stakeholders, and it did include domestic violence individuals and organizations.
Very well. Representative Mueller, you're done?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Very much. Representative Johnson and Representative Edelson.
Chair Mariani, couple things. I've been reading through this bill more and more. We did hear it briefly, just a quick overview in Judiciary. We didn't really dig into it that heavily at that time because we knew it was going other places. But as I've been reading it more, this bill looks like it's designed to actually replace the specialty veterans courts. And I have a problem with that. Right? Those specialty courts are designed not to give a conviction, but to work with them to avoid the conviction. This is dealing things with after conviction, which has serious threats consequences to the verdict. And it probably requires a guilty plea to get into this program. And it requires admission to stuff sometimes might not be true just to get into this program to eventually have it coming off your record. So, like I say, I have problems with this. And maybe Mr. Kingsley can answer if this was written to replace the Veterans Court system, because that's the way I read it.
Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, this is to provide some uniformity with Veterans Court. It wouldn't replace existing veterans courts. It would make sure that they follow some of the provisions that are in the bill before you. For example, I'm aware of a veterans court, I don't want to get into which county it is, where they don't have mentors. Mentors are a key part of any veterans court. This bill would, again, try to attempt to establish some uniformity. The veteran here does have to enter a guilty plea. The guilty plea is not accepted by the court. It's put in abeyance. And if the veteran completes all of the requirements, then the plea is not entered and the charges are dismissed. And I can tell you, you're in veterans court for a year and a half, 2 years to 2.5 years. It's not a 6-month situation. You're under observation for an extremely long period of time by a number of people.
Very well. Representative Johnson, you're through.
I just a little comment on that one. There's a reason it takes a year to 18 months to get through the Veterans Court system, because that's how long it takes to work. When you're doing misdemeanors and petty misdemeanors or gross misdemeanors, that's to put them into this program. They're not going to get through the program and complete it successfully, and they're going to be off the program. That is why Veterans Court is designed on the level to take that long, because that's how long it does take. To go shorter than that, it's doing a disservice to our veterans. And with that, I cannot support this.
Very well. Representative Edelson, followed by Representative Considine.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, first of all, thank Representative Eklund, or Chair Eklund, for this bill. how I read this is not a replacement of courts at all. It's a diversion program. And we, I mean, I come from a family where every single person in my family has served in the military. There is trauma. There is PTSD. As a clinical therapist, I can tell you it is ingrained within their service. So I think it is, I mean, this is so important that we offer these people that serve our country an opportunity when they do to deal with some of that trauma. And there's not enough services when people come back from Afghanistan and Iraq or whatever the, you know, we could go back for decades. So to say that this is completely not something we should consider, I just want to thank you, Chair, for bringing this bill. It's really important. And again, just very supportive.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Chair Considine.
Chair Eklund, are you still on?
I'm here.
I remember when we were discussing this and you brought it forward last to the judiciary and public safety. And as I recall, there were only about 16 veterans courts in the state. Is that correct?
Chair Eklund.
Chair Mariani and members of by recollection, that's the number, but I would have to look, like I said, my name file back in my office.
Okay, again, that's what I remember. This bill is not designed to replace veterans courts. It is to bring services to primarily greater Minnesota where there are not veterans courts. There is one in Blue Earth County. I have an extremely high regard for it. They do great work. But in particularly in greater Minnesota, veterans courts are not readily available to everybody. And this bill is trying to bring services to our veterans in greater Minnesota. And so, Chair Eklund, I really appreciate you bringing this forward. Again, six straight generations in my family have served in the military, and some of them have had some real struggles when they have come back from their service, particularly a couple of cousins from Vietnam. So I appreciate it, and I'm going to ask for a roll call on this, please.
Very well. Chair Constan, I represent Constan, I request a roll call. And members, let me just say, I did have staff check about this issue of roll calls. Under the present platform in which we're conducting business. And what we heard from Pat McCormick was that the decision to move bills with voice vote is up to the chair, but we strongly urge roll calls to preserve the legitimacy of the members' votes. And this apparently was advice that had been sent to both both caucuses in the past. It's going to be a little cumbersome, but I think we probably want to, err that way as opposed to the other way. I think when it comes to minutes, it's, stakes there are not as they're different. However, there has been a roll call that's been requested, and if there are no further questions or comments.
Chair Mariani, can you restate them?
Yes, thank you, Representative Johnson. The motion before us is to amend House File 717 with the DE4 amendment, and the DE4 amendment is the language in House File 998, which is Chair Eklund's bill. All right, the clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Chair Mariani?
Yes.
Edelson?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Lesh?
Aye.
Wong?
Aye.
Lucero?
No.
Miller? Moeller?
Aye.
Nash?
No.
Novotny?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pinto?
Yes.
Poston.
I'm sorry, no.
Hmm. 10 ayes, 6 noes, and 1 absent.
That's what I have as well. And so the motion does prevail. And members, now House File 717 as amended is before us. Representative Chair Eklund, any final words before we move on the amended bill?
Well, thank you, Chair Mariani and members. I appreciate the discussion. This bill is never intended to replace anything, only to enhance something. When we send our young men and women overseas to do our nation's business in battle or police actions or whatever, and they come back traumatized, we owe it to them that we make every effort we can to make sure that they can reintegrate into the society. So I thank the members for their support, and I appreciate the time today.
Very well. So members, we will be doing a roll on this. And so the chair renews his motion that House File 717, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Edelson.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Considine.
Aye.
Dean.
Aye.
Howard. Howard.
Aye.
Lesh.
Aye.
Wong.
Aye.
Lucero.
No.
Miller. Moeller.
Aye.
Nash.
No.
Novotny.
No.
O'Neill.
No.
Pinto.
Aye.
Poston.
No.
Miller. Ten ayes, 6 noes, 1 absent excuse again.
I have the same count. And so members, House File 717 as amendment, the motion to refer House File 717 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee passes. So with that, Representative Eklund, you're on your way. Thank you for working on this bill for quite a while. Thank you, Mr. Kingery, for your work on the bill, as well as your work generally with veterans and with this issue. And I wish you luck at the next committee. And so with that, members, we're going to move on to House File 3109. And Representative Edelson, this is your bill. And wait a minute, did I jump over? You know, I think I jumped over. I apologize. We're going to do the Pinto bill first. I apologize, Representative Edelson. Representative Pinto, we have House File 627, and I believe your motion is to refer it to the General Register. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I do move House File 627 that it be moved to the move for recommended for placement of the General Register. Members, we heard this bill last session, and it was included in the budget bill that was passed out of our committee. It simply would require that the eyewitness identification best practices, that there be a statewide model policy that would be created Members may remember this. I know there are a couple of amendments to put the bill in the shape that I'd like, Mr. Chair, if we can do that.
Very well. I believe,
Mr. Chair,
the author of amendment is the A2 amendment, Representative Poston.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt you again. I just got another text message from Representative Miller, and he says he's listening, but he is muted, and he was not able to respond to that last vote.
Boy, that's frustrating.
We got him now?
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, you got me now.
Okay.
Oh, I'm from Representative Miller. All right, very well. So,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Miller.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was trying to vote on the two roll calls. I was muted. So what do I do about that?
You know, Representative Miller, that's fair. I can certainly move to reconsider that vote and then take the vote again. Would that be acceptable, Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lesch?
I think it might be shorter to just maybe suspend the rules or whatever to recognize votes registered by Representative Miller. I don't know. Either way.
I do not have a problem with that.
Good with me.
So I need some advice here. We would be suspending the committee rule challenge.
Oh, Mr. Chair, you can do what you want, but the committee can do what it wants, too. So if we decide to recognize his votes on that, that goes into the record. I don't know. Maybe counsel can correct me on it, but that's what I would do.
So make sure we get this done correctly. Any thoughts on this, counsel? Either counsel?
Mr. Chair, this is Jeff Diebel. I've never encountered that practice. I don't know if it's Chair Lesch may have had experience with it in his committee.
You know what? There are a number of things where all of us are encountering that we haven't encountered before, no doubt. You know, it does seem to me that probably the more straightforward, it'll take a little time, but not terribly, would be to reconsider the vote and then just recast the vote. Does that seem? It sounds like Representative Johnson's okay with that. And so why don't we do that?
Mr. Chair, this is Lucero.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you. So if I understand correctly, what Representative Miller said is he missed two votes. So if I understand, we'd have to reconsider the amendment, and then we would have to reconsider the final vote.
You technically may be correct, depending on when Representative Miller was able to join us. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on the entire time. I was just on mute from your side. For the sake of time, I don't think I need to have two recorded votes. I think you pass the amendment, that's fine. If you want to reconsider the bill as amended, and you do a vote on that, I'd be fine with that as long as that's doable.
Okay, why don't we do that? Members, we're going to do the reconsideration vote on a voice vote, then we'll take a roll on.
Mr. Chair, this is Jeff Diebel. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes, Mr. Diebel.
I think we're on another motion right now for Representative.
You are.
You want to conclude that or set that aside and then go back just to so you don't.
Why don't we conclude the members? Thank you, Mr. Diebel. You're correct. Why don't we conclude the business before us and then we'll back up to House of Representatives. So, and if somewhere along the line I forget, somebody remind me. Okay, Representative Pinto, we were talking about. Authors of amendment, I think you're about to make, which is the A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I should probably know that there is an A1 amendment that I believe was submitted after the deadline, but it simply corrects a typographical error. And so I believe that the chair was intending to, and it may have been even submitted by Representative Johnson. But I think that the chair was just planning to take notice of that and adopt the A1 amendment just to correct that error. But I was going to offer the A2 amendment for consideration.
We can go in either order. So why don't we do this? The A1 amendment, unless you want to, I'll move the A1 amendment, Representative Pinto.
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
All right, the chair moves the A1 amendment. And the members, this is an incredibly technical amendment. In all transparency, I've been told that we missed the posting deadline on this. However, I'm going to ask counsel for advice here. This is an incredibly technical amendment that has to do with a reviser's error. And what I've been told is that we can simply advise the revisers, I believe the revisers, to adopt without a formal motion this technical correction error on their part. But let me ask for counsel for advice.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. This is Jeff Diebel. I didn't see if Ben was going to answer, but yeah, I didn't. I think you could do that, or you could just waive the 24-hour or the deadline for posting if you do that and adopt it.
Well, let's do that. That's clear. Representative Johnson.
Now, this was previously posted at one other time before, so I have no problem with bringing it forward now.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So the chair moves the A1 amendment, corrects just a simple drafting error on the part of our drafters. And so with that, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 All same side. Motion prevails, and House File 627 is amended with the A1 amendment. Now, Representative Pinto, we have the A2 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do move the A2 author's amendment. There are a couple of concerns that members may remember having been raised last year relating to a few aspects of the bill, of the proposal. These are addressed here, and also there's an update of dates. I believe that there is at least one testifier who will be testifying regarding the A2 amendment in favor of it. But I'll just note that as well that this will put the bill in the form that I, as the author, wish.
Of course. Do we have someone in the waiting to testify on the A2 amendment?
I believe Mr. Small from the County Attorneys Association was planning to. I could be wrong about that.
I've just been notified that Judge Small is indeed here. Judge Small, please. It's good to see you, sir.
Am I on?
Yes.
No.
You're on.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, you may recall that the County Attorneys Association, thank you. We appeared last session and expressed some concerns about the language of the bill. And since that time, we worked with
go ahead, Mr. Small. You're fine with the feed, I believe. Perhaps not. Can you hear me, Mr. Small?
So I think as I pick up on where we left off, we worked with All right, we worked with Representative Pinto and members of the Innocence Project to address those concerns. Excuse me. In any event, the County Attorneys Association is supportive of the... And we support the amendment.
It might be the most important thing we needed to hear. Very well, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that that's, I know that there'll be another issue raised. I know that there's an A3 amendment that was at least posted. And so maybe it makes sense. I know there's another testifier, but I think, well, we can handle it. However, I have no further testifiers regarding the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pinto, there is a A3 amendment to the A2 amendment. And so I guess at this point, the question is whether anyone is going to offer the A3 amendment.
Chair Mariani, that would be my amendment.
Representative Johnson moves the A3 amendment to the A2 amendment. Representative
Johnson. When I had this amendment drafted, I was looking at the fiscal notes. And in the fiscal notes, in bold writing, it had stated that the post board, because of all the things they had going on and the possibility of a lot of stuff coming to them, had requested an extra year to put this together, if this passes. They have since redid their statement and said they do not need that. I would just leave it up there for consideration. I believe we do have somebody from the post board here that, if needed as well, to leave that, and I'm thinking of maybe still leaving that, putting that on, give them that extra year to make sure they get it right and work with the courts to get the evidential procedures down right, so stuff isn't thrown out of court should it be wrong compared to the court process and some of the court decisions on evidence and evidence procedures.
So, Representative Johnson, I just want to get it clear. Are you moving the A3 amendment or?
I am going to move the A3 amendment for now and so we can discuss it.
Okay, very well. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I want to thank Lee Johnson for pointing that out in the fiscal note, because it's true that when it came out from the post board, there was concern about being able to get this done in time. As it turns out, when they looked at it again, they determined that, in fact, it can be done in the time frame originally in the bill, or the bill with the A2 amendment. And obviously, we want to have – there's many advantages to getting this going as soon as we are able. But we do have Mr. Missel from the post board, and maybe provide some assurance to Lee Johnson if we can just have him share his thoughts on this.
Very well. Mr. Missel, welcome to the committee. Hopefully the technology will treat you nicer than it did Mr. Small. There we go.
Mr. Chair, perhaps they're watching the live feed, which is the delay.
Representative O'Neill, you may be correct. I think, however, I've been told that they're in the waiting room.
Mr. Chair, I can see them right as part of our Zoom call. So I believe that Mr. Missel, I don't know if he can hear us, but if he can.
Yeah, I'm wondering if staff can get word in to Mr. Missel. I assume he needs to unmute. We'll give it another second.
I'm trying to give him a call.
Okay, thank you, Jason. Well, members, perhaps we'll be better human beings after this crisis in terms of learning new types of patients. Representative Pinfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll just note that that there is a message from Mr. Missel that was shared with Representative Johnson and staff, in which the Post Board did confirm that the deadlines that are in the bill or in the bill with the A2 will work for the Post Board. I do understand the thought of giving more time, but let's remind ourselves that in the meantime, we'll be having what are now not the best practices for eyewitness identification. And just a reminder to members from last year, that's not just about protecting rights of defendants, which is, of course, critical. That also is beneficial to those of us who are prosecutors as well, because then we can point out to juries that they can feel confidence when eyewitness identification happens. So I guess if we're at a point where we can't have Mr. Missel speak at this point, we can perhaps ask that there be a formal, they can provide a letter or something in writing, providing that support. But again, we already have a message from them, and I guess I would urge members with respect to vote down the A3 amendment.
Let me ask if Mr. Missel can still join us. I'm getting word that he might be able to.
Chair Mariani,
Representative.
Since they think they can get it done and get it done properly within the short time period, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. So Representative Johnson withdraws the A3 amendment. We are now on the A2. Amendment. Any further discussion? All right, members. I'm going to follow Mr. McCormick's lead here and or advice and ask the clerk to take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Edelson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Considine?
Aye.
Dean?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Blesch?
Aye.
Blesch? Long?
Aye.
Lucero?
Yes.
Miller?
Aye.
Moeller?
Aye.
Nash?
Aye.
Novotny?
Aye.
O'Neill?
Aye.
Pinto?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
17 ayes.
Very well. Members, the motion does prevail, and House 627 is amended with the H2 amendment. Representative Pinto, any other words?
My final comment, I should have pointed this out before, is that this bill has been passed out of committee in the other body and is awaiting floor action. So you can feel confident, members, that there was support over there for whatever that's worth. And so hopefully we can move this as well, match it up, and make this become law. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Very well. Then, Representative Pinto, this will be a roll call, members. Representative Pinto renews his motion renews his motion that House File 627 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Edelson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Considine?
Aye.
Dean?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Flesh?
Aye.
Long?
Aye.
Lucero?
Yes.
Miller?
Aye.
Moeller?
Aye.
Nash?
Aye.
Novotny?
Aye.
O'Neill?
Aye.
Pinto?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
17 ayes.
Very well. The motion does prevail, and House File 627, as amended, is referred to the General Register. We do have a question for Representative O'Neill, then I think our next step is to back up to House File 717 as amended. Representative O'Neill?
So I had put my hand up before hoping that you would have a member comment or question. I was just going to offer my support for the bill. I'm an author on it, and I think it's a great step forward, especially with the amendment. The amendment resolves some problematic issues, but since we didn't have member conversation, that I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I apologize for moving quicker than perhaps I should have, but it's good to have those comments on the record. Members, with that, the chair will move to reconsider the vote by which we passed House File 717 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. And members, we can do this as a voice vote. So all in favor of that motion to reconsider, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. The chair moves House File 717 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Edelson.
Aye.
Johnson, can someone unmute themselves?
Yeah, okay.
Johnson.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Considine.
Aye.
Dean.
Aye.
Howard.
Aye.
Blush.
Aye.
Long.
Aye.
Lucetto.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moeller.
Aye.
Nass.
No.
Novotny.
No.
O'Neill.
No.
Pinto.
Aye.
Holston.
No.
Ten ayes, seven noes.
Very well. Out of all the 10 dissents, the motion does prevail. House File 717, as amended, is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Members, now we're ready for House File 3109, Representative Edelson. And Representative Edelson, I believe your motion is to re-refer House File 3109 to the General Register.
Yes, Chair.
Very well. A motion is before us. Representative Edelson.
The committee heard this bill previously. It's the extended juvenile jurisdiction, extended jurisdiction juvenile designation report required. This is a program that we started in 1995 for youth that were, instead of an adult sentence, they would be able to have this designation under probation. What we have been hearing reports on is that first of all, we don't have any data when this was passed to kind of look at statewide if it's successful. Many prosecutors' offices are, just guessing that they don't think it 100% is we're seeing the success rates that we initially wanted. Of course, it does provide prosecutors' offices with some great ability to help youth, but I think a report would be very helpful. I know that there was some concern about people, the youth that were on this designation, that they never got off early, and that also it was predominantly African-American youth that were on this. So I think a report would be very helpful. And the goal, I think, of the report would really be about prevention. So I know that there was also an amendment, I believe, Chair.
Yes. And I'm wondering if whoever's not muted, if they can mute themselves. We're getting a little interruption in Representative Edelson's testimony. Representative Edelson, there is an A1 amendment. Is anyone, will anyone offer the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, that's my amendment.
Representative O'Neill moves the A1 amendment. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just simply changing the biennial report to the legislature on behalf of the DOC to an annual report, so every year. And I think we've seen, particularly now, that information is incredibly helpful as we make decisions moving forward. And we especially have seen this year and last year were very, very different. So that's why the change.
Very well. Representative Edelson?
Chair, I'm supportive of that, and I just want to thank Representative O'Neill for the suggestion. I think that's it's a really good point and a good amendment.
Representative Edelson, the chair agrees with your analysis and with your call, Representative O'Neill. I do note that this may bump up the fiscal note cost of it. So I just want members to be aware that it's not terribly huge. I mean, the whole fiscal note to begin with is not a terribly huge fiscal note, but it is a cost nonetheless. And one would certainly generally hope that when it comes to these, at least I would hope that when it comes to these level of costs that we're talking about, costs that our departments can absorb. However, you know, all departments are always going to fight for appropriations to do their work. So as this moves forward, I'll certainly be watching that fiscal note cost. I don't want really good policy to wind up getting hurt. However, this is such a small amount that hopefully it won't be an issue. So Representative Edelson is fine. How do we do this? I forgot. We haven't done this in a while. Representative O'Neill, I'm going to ask you for advice. I'm forgetting how we do this. Can the author accept the amendment, or do we just typically vote on it?
We need to vote, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. It's been a while. All right. Let's do this as a voice vote, members. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. House File 3109, as amended, is before us. Representative Edelson, anything else?
No, Chair. I think that's it.
Okay, very well. So then,
Chair Mariani,
Representative Polston,
if I could just ask a quick question. I'm confused about where this bill is going. You think you said the general register, but I think it needs to go to Ways and Means. So, am I wrong about that, or?
Representative Polston, I think you may well be correct about this. It's got a cost to it. I mean, there are bills that go to the floor with costs when we're talking about minimal costs like this, and typically what that means is that there's an understanding that departments are absorbing those costs. It certainly would be within the right of anyone on the floor, however, to raise the question of, you know, whether or not this should be seen by Ways and Means. So there is a little bit of a risk if we send it to the floor. If someone, I mean, you could still vote on the floor, you know, the whole body is sitting now, you know, it doesn't really need to be seen. I sense a strong bipartisan support for this. I would hope that we can dispense with, you know, the Ways and Means stop. But I open it up to members' advice and thoughts.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe there's a specific threshold that maybe Mr. Diebel or Mr. Walls could speak to as far as what we're allowed to send to the floor and what we're not. I just can't remember off the top of my head what that monetary.
You may be correct, and I wonder if anyone in council, maybe even Mr. Walls, might have some insight on this. Mr. Walls. The technology is not our friend today.
Hello.
Welcome, Mr. Walls.
Is this about the annual cost for the report?
Yeah, so the question is, the motion is to move this to the general register. There is a cost. So typically, we're sending bills like this to Ways and Means. This is such a small cost that my understanding is that if it goes to the floor, we're basically saying the department's going to absorb this.
Right.
However, that could be challenged on the floor. I don't think people are interested in doing that. But nonetheless, the question for Representative O'Neill, had to do with whether or not there's a certain threshold that would require a ways and means stop relative to the cost.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that making the report annual would create a cost for the department.
Very well. I like that. However, there is still a cost to the bill, Representative Walls, or Mr. Walls.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a big one. I guess the question is whether or not there's a threshold that...
Mr. Chair, anything that has a cost should go to Ways and Means.
All right. Representative Edelson, as much as I hate to send you to Ways and Means, because who knows when they meet? We're down to one meeting a week. That's kind of the limitations. It sounds like technically it might be important for us to send it to Ways and Means.
Sounds good. So I guess the motion then would be switched to have House File 3109 go to Ways and Means.
Very well. Representative Ellison moves that House File 3109 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll on that motion.
Mariani?
Aye.
Can people please mute themselves? Edelson.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Considine.
Yes.
Dean.
Aye.
Howard.
Aye.
Blush.
Aye.
Long.
Aye.
Lucero.
Yes.
Miller.
Aye.
Moeller.
Aye.
Nash.
Aye.
Novotny.
Aye.
O'Neill.
Aye.
Pinto.
Aye.
Poston.
Aye.
17 ayes.
Very well. The motion prevails and House File 3109 as amended is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, I'm going to try to move really quickly because I'm being told we're going to lose our time here. Next bill up is House File 2023, Representative Mulder. I believe Representative Mulder, the motion here is to reconsider.
Chair Mariani.
Representative Johnson.
I'm not sure where, but on March 4th, we actually sent this out of committee and placed it on the general register of this particular bill. It's in the minutes from March 4th.
Right. I believe the motion is to consider that motion and then send it to Ways and Means. So Representative Mueller moves that House File. Representative
Johnson. I'm not sure. Do we have to recall that bill because it's sitting on the general register to get it back to our committee?
I'm told the bill is not on the general register.
We sent it there. That's the thing. We sent it there. I don't know if the paperwork wasn't done, but it was sent to the general register by this committee.
Mr. Chair, I could address this, please.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Johnson, you're right, we did that, but this bill was actually introduced in 2019. So I was told that because it was under the old rules that we had in 2019, where we were having things go through Ways and Means, as opposed to going to the floor, that we needed to follow the 2019 rules that were in place. And so that's why we have the motion today to send it through Ways and Means. But you're absolutely right that that's what we did and that there is no fiscal cost in the bill. It was just because it was a 2019 bill that we needed to make this clarification.
And a little further information along with that, Representative Mueller, is that because of that, the report, and Representative Johnson alluded to this, the committee report was not processed formally. And so it's not on the general register. Representative Mueller moves that House File 2023 be reconsidered for the committee reconsider the vote under which House File 2023 was sent to the register, General Register. Members, all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Mueller moves that House File 2023 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Okay. I see a few hands. Representative Poston.
We going to vote?
I do see some hands, so I want to make sure.
Mariani, Chair Mariani, I should have lowered my hand. I've already asked my question.
Quite all right. Representative Dean, I see your hand up. Nope, I don't see Representative Dean's hand up anymore. The clerk will take the roll to move House File 2023. I don't think we amended this, Representative Mueller, to the Ways and Means Committee. The clerk.
Mariani.
Aye.
Edelson.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Considine.
Aye.
Dean.
Aye.
Howard.
Aye.
Lush.
Aye.
Long.
Aye.
Lucero. Lucero.
Yes.
Miller.
Aye.
Mueller.
Aye.
Nash.
Aye.
Novotny. O'Neill.
Aye.
Pinto.
Aye.
Poston.
Aye.
Novotny. Okay. 16 ayes, 1 excuse.
Very well. The motion prevails, and House File 2023 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The last bill before us, members, is my bill, House File 334, Post Board Membership Expanded. We had acted on this bill prior. The motion I'm making at this point is to re-refer to the General Register. There is an A1 amendment, I believe, Representative Johnson. That's your amendment?
Chair Mariani, yes, that is correct. This is my amendment. And the amendment, what it does is list where the new individuals that are being placed on this board come from. One must be from a statewide crime victims coalition. And two members must be residents of counties other than the metropolitan counties as defined by Chapter 470 for Section 473.121, Subdivision 4.
Very well. I think it's a good amendment, members, and I would urge our adoption of the amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. House File 334, as amended, is before us. There being no discussion. All right. So the motion is to re-refer House File 334 as amended to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
I'm sorry, Chair, did you say which House File was that again?
House File 334 as amended.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I misheard. Mariani?
Aye.
Edelson?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Considine?
Aye.
Dean? Oh, okay, aye. Dean?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Lesh.
Aye.
Long.
Aye.
Lucero. Lucero. Miller.
No.
Mueller. Nash?
Nope.
Novotny?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pinto?
Aye.
Poston? Poston? I see you say no, Representative Poston, but I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No, thank you.
Yep. Lucero? Mueller. Okay. I have to recount. One, two, three. So 9 ayes, 6 noes, 2 absent are excused.
All right. So the motion prevails and House File 334 is amended. It's referred to the register. Thank you, members, for a very efficient meeting today. Just stay posted. It's my intention to call us back into hearing next week. I'll be looking for us, hopefully in a bipartisan way, to pass ongoing COVID response legislation. And I think we may have the forfeiture reform bill next week. I'll be checking with Chair Lesh on that. I'm hoping that that also will enjoy bipartisan support. So with that, members, please be safe, and we'll see you all next week. This committee stands adjourned.